Hey everyone, this is Josh, co-founder of Urban Valor. Welcome to another episode of the Urban Valor Podcast. Our guest today is Marine and Army veteran Jose Valenzuela. Jose was born in Mexicali, Mexico. He grew up in poverty and came to the United States around the age of 7. He was inspired to join the military after Marine recruiters visited his high school. Jose spent 13 years in the Marines and 7 years in the Army before retiring as a staff sergeant. He's conducted several deployments and worked multiple occupations while in the military. Jose leaves us with advice about getting VA benefits upon transitioning out of service. If you enjoy this episode, go give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment to help support our veterans. The bigger the community, the bigger the impact. If you'd like to contribute your story to Urban Valor and know anyone else who may, reach out to us on Instagram at Urban Valor TV, or you could email us at team@urbanvalor.com. Enjoy the show.
So I served in the Marine Corps 13 years, 7 in the Army. And I did a total of 20, so I'm retired. What was the other question you were asking?
What rank did you get out?
Staff Sergeant.
Staff Sergeant?
Yes, sir. That's the only one you need to retire.
So yeah.
I wasn't Sergeant First Class material in the Army.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What job did you sign up as in the Marines?
In the Marine Corps, I was a heavy equipment mechanic.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
So I was guaranteed combat engineers.
Okay. Before we get into your military service, talk to me about where you're from and what your childhood upbringing was like.
Sure. So I was born in a small town called Mexicali.
I don't know
if you're familiar with it.
Yeah.
Mexicali, Baja California, Norte, Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up there at a really, really bad neighborhood. There are certain levels to poverty, but, I think I was up there because, for example, let me think, we didn't eat any meat when we were growing up, not because we didn't like it, because we didn't have money to buy it.
You didn't have what? Meat?
Meat.
Oh, okay.
Like bacon and sausage. We had fish. That was it. Fish, beans, tortilla. So the diet itself was already bad. Bad enough. I had no running water. I'd go to a restroom, you gotta go outside.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, we got running water.
Okay.
I grew up with cloth diapers because they're rewashable.
Really?
No Pampers or Loves for me.
Yeah. Can you speak up just a little louder?
That's right.
I just want to make sure we appreciate it. So cloth diapers, huh?
Yeah.
No running water.
No running water.
Who did you live with?
My mom. My dad was doing his own thing.
Yeah.
And he would come, ask my mom for money at night. So my mom would take us, put a ladder in the back of the house and we'd climb to the roof and we sleep upstairs. Mm. We could hear my dad coming in. Ah, blah, 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 blah. It was cold, but, the stars were very pretty.
Yeah.
But, we did that a couple times. And I was like, yeah, that's not good.
Mm. What inspired you to join the Marines?
Well, before you go there, I forgot to mention, first grade, my aunt was my teacher.
Your aunt?
My aunt, yeah, rest in peace. And then second grade was my aunt again. And then third grade was my uncle. And then in between third grade, that's when we came to the United States. So then around, I was 7 years old, my dad disappeared, came to the United States. Him, my grandfather, and my mom, they had a big mafia meeting. They said, we're going to go to the United States. They said they wanted to come to the United States to become rich. Now people are like, nah, I want to get a job, a better life and all this stuff. But they say they wanted to come here and be rich. So my dad comes over through San Isidro, through the mountains. He said he had a Mustang boss waiting for him. I don't know. Maybe he was a baller back then. Anyway, a year later, he invites us to come to the United States, Southgate, California. So we all move in a garage. Double car garage, all 5 of us, my dad, my mom, my older sister, myself, and my younger sister, and we had a bathroom and a kitchen. So all 5 of us are in that little garage. At this point, everybody's calling us wetbacks. That was the word. Wetback, hey, wetback. Nowadays, if somebody says wetback, I'm like, are you talking about me? Because they used it so much, but it was, racism was really rampant. It was really bad. Then we moved into a 1-bedroom apartment. We moved up in life. And I continued going to school, and then I went to junior high, and I went to high school. When I was in third grade, I would tell my friend to ask the teacher if I could use a restroom. In Spanish, Miss Douglas, should I try the restroom? Oh, go. After a while, he got tired. One day he got tired. I said, hey, man, ask her. He said, no, you do it. And I'm like, I don't speak English. I gotta go. And I'm looking at the clock. I said, man, I'm not gonna make it. It was like 8. So I closed my eyes really tight. And all of a sudden, you could just hear the urine hit the floor. And all of a sudden, oh, Miss Douglas, wow, disgusting. Miss Douglas got mad at me. She took me outside and had put me on a chair and said, wait till you dry. And I said, you know what? I better learn English, and I better learn it quick because these people aren't messing around. I went to junior high, Southgate Junior High, go Vikings. We had an opportunity to go see the Olympics back then in 84. The governor, I think it was Governor Dugmation, gave us permission, and we got bused to the Rose Parade, and we saw West Germany, I think, against somebody else. But at least, you know, you were part of an Olympic event, and I thought that was great. You know, I really liked that. Then I went to Southgate High School. Southgate High School, vocational heaven. You know, you got a wood shop, you got an electrical shop, you had, when I was in junior high, they had a, you had upholstery, you had print shop, you had auto shop, all vocationals. Like, hey man, you're not gonna make it a college, bro. You're gonna be doing some of this, so start learning now. So I started doing mechanics. I did 4 years in mechanics, and I had a teacher, his name is Mr. Otto from Finland. And he taught me two things, really. I'll touch on this really quick. He said that when he was in Finland, people would come in and they request him to do the oil changes. And his friends were like, hey man, how come they're asking for you? He said, you know why? Because when I was done doing the tune-up, I would clean the windshields from the customers. And since it snowed over there, you know, it made a difference when you sat there and you went, oh wow, this is nice. Attention to detail, pretty much. And he told me, taught us a trick of how to turn the engine with screwdrivers and wrenches and all that shit. And that's gonna be very important. So, senior year, I wanna be a Marine. Why? Well, last year they had fast roped. They brought a helicopter and they fast roped the high school's playing yard back there. I was like, wow, that's cool. I wanna do that. What's the best service? Marine Corps is the best. Why? Oh, because of this and this and this and that. I said, well, that's for me. So I go talk to a recruiter. He's like, you have anything? I said, yeah, I have an open warrant. He goes, for traffic, I can't use you. So I went away, came back a couple years later. Hey, I cleaned it. I'm good. Okay. QEP program, quality enlistment program, 6-year enlistment. You guarantee your duty station, Camp Pendleton, and you get promoted E3 quick. It's great. Let's do it, man. Sure enough, went to boot camp like everybody else. Back then, they had little booths. There were boxing boots, and there was Danny there, and you would box against another kid, you know, in your platoon. I don't think they have that anymore. So what happened is I did my thing, and they took the kid away, and they left me standing there, right? And I'm not doing anything, stand, but I can hear everybody forming it up. Another kid from another platoon walks in. I don't know, this guy looked like an Italian dude. His platoon drill sergeants are behind him. My drill sergeants are now behind me. They're rooting us on to fight. So I said, okay, you know, and they're like, all right, blah, blah, blah. Well, you need to do, like, they're coaches and professionals, you know. I could have sworn they were betting money on us, man. So we started fighting. And I busted the kid's nose, started bleeding. So they're like, oh, okay, enough. Go wash up. And we went to wash up. And I could have swore they were like, all right, give me your money. But the instructors are shady, you know that. So I went to the bathroom and I had specks of blood in my forehead. I said, man, he made me bleed. And I washed it off. And it wasn't mine. It was the dude's. I got pneumonia. I was hospitalized for two days. Almost died. Yeah, I put nitroglycerin on my tongue and put me in an ambulance. Because I don't want to complain, because I didn't want to lose my unit. You know, I wanted to graduate with my platoon. And usually if you go to any kind of medical stuff, you stay for too long and they pass you. So I came back and my drill instructor was like, what the hell are you doing here? And I said, oh, I'm back. And, you know, sir, this is a chip from medical or something. We dropped you already. You're done. I felt really bad. I was like, I must have put my sad face, because he goes, why do you want to graduate, or why do you want to come back to us? And I said, because I want to graduate with my platoon. And he's like, get out of my face. I was like, wow, I'm in. So I was able to graduate with them, dressed blues and everything. You know, back then they gave us a whole shebang. Went to MCT, and then I went to MOS School. MOS School obviously is no longer there. It was in Courthouse Bay, Camp Lejeune. And they were there for a while. Now they're doing it in Leonardwood, Missouri. But when we were there, it was a scary place, man. You have a bay, and it was just like cold and everything. I don't know. I learned a lot, but I wasn't really happy with Camp Lejeune. I said, this isn't for me. So then I went to 7th ESP, Camp Pendleton, main site. Mechanic. I'm there, and every time after 1600, we just stand around waiting for the platoon sergeant to come out and tell us what the war is going to be. I had a push broom, and I would always boom, 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 pick up all the track, all the dirt from the tracks, from the D7s, pile it up, get a shovel, and throw it back. I did that for about 2 weeks. Guys would look at me and I'd say, fucking boot, just got out of boot camp, man. Hey, man, you don't have to do that shit anymore. I still did it because it kept me occupied. One day, platoon sergeant wants to see you. Yeah, platoon sergeant, he goes, you want to go MSSG? And I said, oh, what's that, sergeant? He goes, MSSG, they're on a boat and they go to Australia. Yes, sergeant. So he's like, all right, cut me orders to MSSG. I'm over there. The most misfit unit you have ever seen.
Really? Okay?
These guys were out of this world. You know, Heartbreak Ridge, I ain't got nothing on these guys. These guys were... the things that they did back then would definitely have them in jail right now. Easily. For about 2-3 months, they allowed us to have beer. So during lunchtime, we would go to Sinewinder, drop some beers. Pitchers, $5. They made it really easy. From 17 to 51, I was an alcoholic. So I was in my playground, drinking, drinking, drinking. And that would cause problems. Of course, we'd come back after 1300 and we're drunk operating equipment. That's just not good. Well, one day, Sergeant Smallwood said, hey, man, I'm retiring. I'm going to march you guys, 1300. So we came back. He's all drunk. And we're like, Sergeant, you don't have to do this. You know what? I'm going to march you guys for last time. Platoon, 10, huh? And we're like, Sergeant Smallwood, you don't have to do this. We're good. You know, just shut the fuck up. Right face. Forward, march. Left, right. Come, right. I mean, left. Oh, come on. And we're like, we look like a bunch of misfits, idiots, discharging weapons, federal grounds. You know what I'm talking about.
Really?
We had keg parties, literal keg parties, Wednesday nights. And then we would wake up half an hour early on Thursday to field day. We already knew what had to happen. So Friday nights, we're just drinking. One day, we left the keg in the fucking shower. So NCO started getting involved, and it kind of calmed everything down. But those guys were, you know, they were coming from Desert Storm. And what they wanted to do, one of them, well, two of them, they knew where there was a container, a 40-foot container full of weapons, Iraqi and American. What they wanted to do is get two tramps with a bucket from inside, drive them all the way to Las Flores to dig it out. That's the kind of shit that obviously cannot happen. But back then, the trip ticket, yeah, man, just put another O on it and take off. Nobody was going to say, hey, what are you doing? Nobody questioned us. Then we went to our Westpac 94. I was a working party. So between the metal beams of the ship, there was a big bag. I stuck my hand in a bag of kitchen towels, in a Ziploc bag. I opened up the bag. I opened up the towels, and it was steroids, syringes and everything, vials everywhere. I'm like, fuck, it's cool. So I can put it back on. And I did whatever respectable Marine would do. I gave it to my friend. So my friend starts shooting them up right there. I'm like, you know, I could tell those things just wouldn't happen nowadays, you know. So we took off. We went to Okinawa. Ship life was interesting, you know. I did 2 Westpacs, and it's like a year of your life taken away. But in 94, it was good. 95 was just lame. 94, they would take the 2 toys that they carry around outside, then they open up the back, and we would be able to fish. Oh, fishing off the coast of Somalia, Mogadishu. Then they would open it up, close it up like halfway or 3/4, fill it up with water, and we would just swim there. Swimming, swimming, swimming. They had it halfway open because there was sharks in there. Because supposedly Mogadishu, they had a camel farm, and it was right next to the coast. So they threw all the carcasses there, and that was heaven for the sharks.
Oh, really?
So, you know, that was what they did.
Wow.
Had a chance to be in a LCAC a couple of times. It's very interesting if you've never been on one of those.
What's explain to people what an LCAC is?
LCAC is a hovercraft, the big hovercraft that has the 2 turbines in the back. Mm-hmm. And when they inflate it, it fills up and it feels like you're in an elevator. And then when they shut it off, again, it feels like you're in an elevator. But the first thing you feel as soon as you go up is boom, 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 because you're in the wheel going back in reverse. But it was fun. I really had a good time. I think I was 2 hours. We were 2 hours in there because of something that I can't talk about. But it was some good stuff. Mogadishu itself, I could see it with the big eyes. Big eyes are the Navy ship, binoculars, and it just looked like chaos, man. People running around. It just looked like you envision the hell, everybody running around. That's how it was. So they decided to go in there and send a couple of my guys to a couple of the engineers to go to the coast and purify water with the ROPU, reverse osmosis water purifying unit. Two of my friends went. I wasn't able to go because I was doing flight quarters. They do their thing. They come back. When they come back, one of them isn't like the other one, missing a rifle. Hey, man, what happened to the rifle? Fell asleep, man. I was tired and I fell asleep. When I woke up, my rifle was missing. And all I could see was a bunch of small footprints on the sand. I was like, man, you're lucky. That kid could have killed you, really.
Wow.
So you know what the Marine did with him. They nailed him to the wall, brand reduction, all that good stuff that the Marine Corps is good for. What they also did is they had the chaplain in a Humvee with the translator riding around downtown Mogadishu asking them for that rifle. Nobody turned it in, but they were willing to pay. That just goes to show you how important a simple thing like a weapon could be to an organization like the Marine Corps. They had that C-130 that went down on the coast. They also blew that thing up. You know, and I don't know if you've seen that that movie with Nicolas Cage with the ammunition, where the scene where there's like a plane in Africa and all the guys just come and they scrap it, there's nothing left. Well, that's what the Marine Corps was trying to avoid. Send the Navy team in there, blew it up. Flight quarters was interesting for me. Flight quarters pretty much, the head guy, he's the one that tells the helicopter to land, who makes the helicopter land, and he goes like that. I'm over here, my other guy's over here. We run, we're running with chains and a chalk. We get to the helicopter, put the chalk, hook up the chain to the helicopter, and then hook it to the floor, to the deck. I'll find an Andy. You have to wait there. The helicopter's going like this, and you're just taking in all that exhaust fumes. And then once he's done, he's like, get out. So we get our stuff out, we run back. Helicopter will take off, no biggie. One night we had night vision training. Now we're in the deck. Pitch dark, when you red light with ship, and I'm like, that's cool, man. NVG, they're gonna come in, there's spotlights and shit. Pitch dark. So I'm back there, we're back there, pitch dark, barely see the helicopter. They got NVGs. Helicopter's doing this, the ship is doing this, you know, and they would have to land and then take off. They did well, but once one of the helicopters started sliding, and I was like, oh. But nothing major happened out of that. Mm. I heard when you were talking to Mr. Cruz about the equator. Yeah, they do the same thing.
Yeah, the shell back.
Now, 94 was good. 95 was not. So imagine this. And you'll see probably why they don't do that anymore. They pick the fattest Filipino guy. And they get lard and put it around his hairy belly. And they get a cherry and they stick it in his belly button. You're supposed to take it out with your tongue. I'm glad that's like no longer happening. Yeah. But that gives you an idea of the stuff that
is it no longer happening?
Well, in 95 it didn't.
Oh, okay.
And that's all I can talk about those 2 years, man.
Right.
But it was fun. They called us up. Hey, if you haven't seen the equator, come up whatever stateside or whatever it is. And we all ran like idiots outside, and the Navy's pointing at us, laughing. Why are you guys laughing? So were you expecting to see a lion in the ocean or something? And I was like, we're like idiots. Everybody's laughing at us and came back in. You know, we were thinking there would be like a buoy or something to say, hey, this is the equator. But it wasn't anything there. They were just making fun of us. We went everywhere. Singapore, Jordan, Bahrain, Kuwait, UAE.
Did you get off Kenya, the ship at any of these places?
All of them.
Oh, you did?
All of them except Somalia. Mm. Yeah, Kenya, we made it to Kenya. Kenya's a very poor country, man. I went to a souvenir place and I got my hands full, and the Hindu guy tells the girl, hey, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so she comes in with a little tray. And I'm like, cool. I put the stuff in the tray. I grab the tray. She's like, and I'm like, oh. So she followed me around the shop holding my stuff. I'm like, man, these people, you know, servitude. Oh yeah, I paid, and it was but it was like an experience I wasn't expecting to have in Kenya. Took a tour, and the African guys asked us, "Hey, where are you guys from?" And then my friend went, "Mexican." They're like, oh, a Mexican, yeah.
Lucia, can you speak up a little bit?
Lucia Mendez? He goes, yeah, she's a soap opera actress. Yeah, we watch her here. Like, you watch Mexican soap operas here in Africa. I'm like, ah, I was like, wow, that's some nice stuff, you know. So they get along, and we get along. We do what we have to do. We stopped everywhere. Australia, we were there 2 times. One time I got in trouble the first time because I came back late for Cinderella Liberty. In 94, they showed up Monday. We showed up Monday. They say, come back Saturday. In 95, we show up Monday, come back the same Monday at 12 midnight, Cinderella Liberty.
They let you go on Liberty for a whole week?
Yes, sir.
Oh, wow. Did you have to stand duty during any of those days?
No, that's the Navy.
Oh.
That's what's so sad, you know.
Oh, they didn't make you. I remember being on a ship. They made us do our own duty, too. Not you guys? Wow, that's lucky.
No, not at all. So they were stuck, like they work and then they got a day off and we were just gone. That's what you hear stories about Marines staying in Australia. That's just true. They go over there and they find these Australian beautiful women and they stay there. And there was a guy that was with us that said, bye-bye, I ain't going back with you guys. The only place where I think they love Americans was Australia. They just love us, you know. They would call, and there was a logbook, and anybody could say, hey, we're looking, I have 3 girlfriends, and we're looking for 3 guys to go to the movies. And then you will write it down. Before you left, you look at the book, hey, 3 guys, it's 3 of us, movies, okay, get the phone, call them up, hey, hi, yes. They will come to the pier, pick you up, take you to the movies, and bring you back to the pier.
Wow.
It was like that. Hey, we'd like to invite a service member to dinner, and they will invite you to their house. They were very nice, very, very nice people. You know, some other countries are.
And like, you had Marines not come back? Like they'd stay?
Yes, in Australia.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And it was common.
So they just were AWOL, huh?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yeah, and I hear some just stay there, never come back to the States. And it's just a beautiful country, really. It looks just like the United States, and people are just nicer. But I came back late because I was messing around with the Australian friend that I met, and I was late 2400, and I was late like 5 minutes. So I show up there. They tell me, "I'll see your platoon sergeant." I want to see my platoon sergeant, Staff Sergeant Robinson. It was one of those religious guys. You know, they're in the service. They're religious. You tell me you can't do that, but they still do it. I was him. So he had me doing push-ups and everything. I still had the condom on, pushing them out. And then First Sergeant saw me next morning. He said, I'm not going to take away your ranks, because it was several of us, but you guys ain't going to get no libel in Hawaii. I said, and you have to clean the well deck until we get back stateside. So that's what I did. Every single day I was there, I was cleaning up. I would say, man, it was worth it. Man, yeah, it was worth it. So I did 94, 95. When I was in 95, I was with Lieutenant Davidson. We had 2 forklifts, 2 4Ks. One of them wasn't really working. We had one, and it was starting to have problems. You know, when the starter starts grinding the flywheel, crank, crank, crank. And when we needed it, deadline. So you have all these trucks just standing there ready to be offloaded. I got Lieutenant Davidson dying because that's really why he's there, you know. So I said, well, you know, Mr. Otto taught me a lesson. Let me see if it works. What I did is, it's a diesel engine, of course. I removed the starter, put a screwdriver, the gears on the flywheel, and I was able to move, turn the engine, slap the starter back on, brum, oh, hallelujah. They had it running for 8 hours straight, and they would only stop to put fuel in it, but we got the mission done. They got me a NAM out of that too.
Oh yeah.
So Lieutenant says, hey, you know, what do you want to do after you come back? I said, well, I want to continue traveling. I would like to go to Europe and South America. I said, okay, cool. He went back to the big ship, and then they sent a telegram like 2 weeks later. He said, careful what you ask for. Marine Corps Security Forces, Naples, Italy. I'm like, fuck, he got me. He got me to duty station. I was like, fuck, hell yeah. So then you begin the whole process of going to Marine Corps Security Forces school. It's a pretty, pretty badass school, if you ask me. A lot of good stuff. I qualified sharpshooter with pistol, unfortunately. When I was there, the officer's like, okay, Mr. Valenzuela, are you a citizen or naturalized? I said, no, I'm a naturalized, sir. He says, okay. Well, since you're not a citizen, we can't give you a top secret clearance. We could give you a secret clearance. In other words, I can't have you working with nuclear submarines. And I was thinking to myself, thank you. So, secret. I went to Naples, Italy. the environment was very toxic. They were all grunts. And, you know, I was a 1341. So I was like, treat them this way, treat them that way. You know, you got to do this and you got to do that. And, you know, I didn't feel comfortable. And I made a lot of enemies. You know, I would be a total jackass. You know, example, walk in there and open the door. Hey, this is all messed up. Don't run through it. I mean, there's no need for that. So, you know, I apologize to those Marines, wherever you are. Sorry. When I was there, I made it to Marine Corps Sergeant's course in Quantico, Virginia. I learned Italian. I took the translation, the Italian language test, passed it, and I became a translator. And then we went to Albania. All in that, like those 2 years. Mm. So I was translating for the U.S. forces with the Italians. Anywhere we went, I was like, yeah, ciao, I'll take care of it. And they were paying me extra. So I was like, hey, man, this is good. They sent me to Sergeant's course, Quantico, because I pissed off First Sergeant. He did some drill shit, and I was like, ah, fuck that. I ain't gonna do it. And he's like, okay, you're going to Sergeant's course. So they sent me to Sergeant's course. I learned a lot, you know, sword manual and all that good stuff. Have you ever been to Quantico?
No.
That's very nice.
Yeah?
It's beautiful, man.
What were you guys doing in Albania?
So what happened was they had a Ponzi scheme in Albania. It fell apart. So madness. So they had to rescue evacuate the American embassy in Tirana. So we were sent in to provide security for the housing complex for the American workers. And I was also there to talk to the locals. I would talk to locals in Italian, you know, because a lot of them speak Italian. I was able to get some information, you know, like intel stuff. And I would trade the kid, you know, food or whatever. He give me some of their lek, their currency. That's cool. When we were there, I was the sergeant of the guard, and there was a house across the street with a light on. They would, you know, be loud all the time, but it wasn't like nothing major. So one day they come out yelling at, get out of my way, in their own language. One guy pulls out an AK and starts shooting. And we're like, you know, like, wow, what? And then you feel the branches falling on your head. Oh, shit! We ran into the fighting hole. You know, we called the local authorities. They came back, took the AK away from him. Don't do it again. He probably went back and they gave it back. That's what they were doing in Iraq. So Albania was a pretty interesting story. After that, then I came back and I got orders for recruiting duty. Mm. Our recruiting duty was hard. I'll be honest. I mean, you notice how all these classes are hard, courses are hard. That's because they are, man. These things were hard. Communication skills, selling skills, and recruiting school. Ain't no joke. Once I met drill instructor Sergeant Hartman. He was having a beer at the bowling alley. And I came by and, how you doing? Sort of shook his hand. Hey, how you doing? Rest in peace. That's a cool guy, man. Mm-hmm. But after that, I went to Michigan. They sent my ass to Michigan.
And for recruiting?
Yes, sir. Mm. So here I am, cornfields, snow, Mexican guy knocking on the door saying, hey, white family, let me have your son. I'm taking him to the Marine Corps. That was my perception. I'm like, man, I'm going to fail. But when I got there, I turned out they were very religious, very nice people, to be honest with you. Unlike most of these people that you meet around here, they were wonderful people. And I became what's known as a heavy hitter. So I became a heavy hitter. My friend was also a heavy hitter. And you know, we were doing contracts out the yin-yang.
Meaning you were getting a lot of
yes, sir. A lot of contracts. A lot of contracts. Okay. A heavy hitter. When you roll a donut, that means you have zero. You haven't enlisted anybody. Mm. And that's a whole different punishment. So what I did is what they taught us in school. Start working your juniors. Start working your pool. So I got the juniors involved. I got the pool involved. Bring a friend. You know, like, do the workout. And after that, hey, so what about you? What have you been? Oh, you know, I've been thinking about it. And little by little, they would enlist. So what I did is I started channeling them systematically so that come June, I would be able to have the juniors and the seniors and just get rid of them. I had 11. So I sent all the 11. Little by little, three this week, another three. You know, it was systematic, like I said. My friend, Gunny Wall, was running a donut. He's like, hey, man, I need a contract. I said, I have one. I go, okay, cool. It was a grad. So I hooked him up with that. He was scared. He didn't want to roll a donut again because he had rolled a donut. And when you roll a donut, the recruiter instructor has a word with you. And it's not a good meeting. You could just imagine. I rolled a donut once. I went in there, and he just looked at my paperwork and said, get the fuck out of here. You don't belong here. I was like, thank God. You know, he didn't mess with me. But recruiting was very challenging, at least for me. I think what the biggest problem in recruiting is misconceptions from people. I'll give you a brief example. I had a lady, Mexican kid. She says, I don't want my son to enlist. Why? Because they're going to put him in the front lines. He's going to be the first one to die. I'm like, no, man, that doesn't happen anymore. You know, that there was an instant during the Vietnam War where that actually happened. It doesn't happen anymore. I was able to get the kid enlisted, got signature and everything. A black kid. That doesn't want to let him sign. PC, parental consent. Why? Well, during the 70s, he was in the Air Force, and there were racists towards him. And he obviously doesn't want his child to go through the same. I told him, sir, you know, I understand that, but things are changing. They're not like they used to be. Okay? So then I went through the recruiter route. I said, look, he's 17, 5 months, he can enlist without you. Right now, you have the power to assist him in making that decision. He wants to be a military police, you know, but we're giving him air wing. If you don't, then he's going to do what he wants. Boom. Very successful kid called me. Hey, how you doing, Sergeant? Thanks. Thanks for helping me. Thanks for making me a Marine. No problem, kid. You're all good. So they're recruiting duty. During that time, my dad starts getting sick, my stepdad. Now, I've worked with my stepdad since the 90s. Since I got out of boot camp, he would take me to properties and we would fix them. I put nail there, and I'd drive him. He'd get, you know, happy. When it was time for me to re-enlist, I said, no, I don't want to re-enlist. I want out. Recruiting duty, I did 2 years. I had over 60-some contracts. I was in line for Centurion. Centurion, 100 contracts. Very rare. You see one of those, take a picture. It's like a fucking unicorn. And he starts getting sick. I get out of the military, and I start taking care of the properties. Maintenance here, maintenance there. Mind you, I've been to like 20-plus properties. He never told me they were his, and I never asked. Mm. So then he gets sick. I start taking care of the properties, and then I start working using my MOS as a diesel mechanic, Caterpillar, Quinn, and Montebello. I was there for like about 6-7 months. And then I said, you know what? I've got to go back. I'm missing 7 years. I do 7 years and I retire. So I went back. I said, I already knew. I said, I know the Marine Corps. If I go back to the Marine Corps, they're going to say, no problem. I'm going to send you back to recruiter school and you're going to do 3 years. I said, no, thank you. I went to the Army. Army's like, oh yeah, let me see your DD-214. You know, they go by your RE code. I said, okay, cool. Processed, went to MAPS. When I was in MAPS, they're like, what do you want to do? We have intel, we have ammunition specialists, we have truck driver, and we have cooks. And I'm thinking, how in the hell can I have all those mixed up? I said, I'll take a ammunition specialist. They said, okay, cool. Oh, there's a bonus. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Okay, $19,000 sergeant bonus.
Nice.
Okay, so signed it. Sent me to Redstone Arsenal, did a MOS school over there, and then they shipped me to Mosul. Iraq, June timeframe, 2007. It was a little hairy during that time. And my job was to be in charge of the ammunition supply point. So I was what you would call a fob it. You don't get out of the fobs because I can't. But I did get a chance to run a convoy. I was badass. Behind the ASP was a mountain. It was a hill. It wasn't a mountain. It was a hill. And all you can see is just the smoke billowing from behind. That's where the burn pit was. In Mosul, Camp Mares. So I was there for 6 months exposed to that stuff. You know, I feel good right now, but you know how that goes. Yeah. We came back, and then from there I went again. This time I went and they had me doing intelligence work at the Tactical Operations Center. You sit around, it looks like the United Nations, you know, live feeds coming in and shit because of the secret clearance that I had before. So they gave me an interim, that's what they call it. I mean, you could still work doing intel with a secret, but they're make sure they're refreshing and everything's all right. Okay. So, so then after that, I did the Tactical Operations Center. We were in the Tactical Operations Center one day, and then the comm guy from the corner says, hey, contact. And the battle captain would scream, hey, everybody take your place. So we all took our place. We're just members of every organization that's in the base, you know, Air Force, you had everything. Air Force was to my left. So he's like, how long till we get a feed from the Predator? Like 2 minutes. You know, the unit that handles the Predator. And Air Force, I need a medic, how quick? Just like the movies, man. It was like, man, it really does happen like in the movies. He says, I think he said 5 minutes. Sure enough, the feet comes up for the Predator, and you see these guys carrying this wounded soldier off the MRAP. And the Air Force guys goes, sure enough, 5 minutes, fucking helicopter was there, medevac. It took him out, but he had hemorrhage, so he passed away. Mm. So people would say, well, man, you know, those ISIS and those Iraqis, they're really bad people. What caused his death was had nothing to do with that. The reason why they did that was because tribal leaders were upset that they weren't getting contracts with the Americans, concessions per se. So they battle a lot between families. And if they don't get what they get, they do shit like that. Mm. So one person lost in that year, and it had nothing to do with those clowns.
Wow.
So came back, did another, the third one. We're closing down Iraq. We're getting all the ammo out of here. But this time, I had a friend. You know, I did two tours, and I said, man, it gets lonely out here. So the third one, I said, you know what? Let's see if we can go accompany with a friend. So I traveled. We traveled together. Beautiful woman, you know, higher ranking than me. And then we came back together, and then, you know, we went our separate ways. Pretty much, hey, you take care of my needs, I take care of your needs. And that's how it was. That doesn't happen in Iraq. That's like a big no-no. And if you get caught, bye-bye rank. The only people that could do that are couples. And during Iraq, you had a couple here, and I had a couple in a different FOB. They would come over and visit. They didn't even have that much time to be together. They gave them like half an hour. So what do? They went to the porter shitter. I know, but hey.
Shit.
So, I mean, I seen it where in one of my units, we had a couple living together, you know, the same rank. So it fluctuates, I guess. Then we came back and I went to Afghanistan, Coast Providence. My job was to go and hang out with the same guy that does my MOS, ammunition guy. So I went, we were with the ANA, Afghanistan National Army. Our base was here, their base was here. So all we do, walk around, and we were there pretty much all day. So we were on the ANA practically all day, you know, and I'm glad that none of them just went cuckoo and said, ta 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 ta. We even took them to the rifle range too.
And your job in Afghanistan was you were doing ammunition stuff, right?
I was teaching their ammunition guy at the ANA how we do ammunition in the United States. Theirs was simple, you know, 5.56, 300 rounds, and simple. Okay, 300 rounds. How many did you bring back? Bring me back the brass. How many did you have left over? They don't have any left over, and they don't bring the brass. So it's just like, you know, it's open system. So it was easy. They sacrificed a sheep when we were there. You know, they gave us the internals, because if you're a guest, you get the internals. You don't get the meat, because that's where it's all the protein. You know, only the elders get that stuff, and the men, you know. Their outlook on women was just really bad, you know. I didn't like it. That's one of the reasons why I don't really like Muslims in that sense, because they treat women like if they were animals, and that's unfortunate, you know. And you see it. I had a guy who was going to marry an Afghan girl. He said he offered 3 sheep and a goat and some money, and the man accepted it. However, he wasn't able to see her because they wouldn't let him see her until they got married. I'm like, man, that's some crazy-ass culture. Imagine that. You don't know who you're marrying. Anyway, after that, I got out. Well, when I separated, I was starting to do my disability paperwork. So here I am, you know, doing my stuff, this and that. Well, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with that? Get a PTSD evaluation. What else? What kind of paperwork do I need? So I got all my documents, put them in a CD, and then I went to a print shop and made a book out of it. 2 copies. In case I need to share it with the VA. So then I had, I started doing my sleep apnea study. And then October 31st, 2014, goodbye, you're retired. Like, great. So what I do now? So I kept working on my disability, okay? And I sent it off. I came back, that was in Texas. And I came back to the United States to continue working with the properties. But guess what? My dad's very ill and he passes away. Mm-hmm. Okay. When he passes away, he inherits me some of those properties, the same ones that I was working at. So now I'm sitting on properties and I'm asking, well, how am I going to run this business? I could easily get somebody to run it, but you know what I mean. So it's property business. And I said, you know what? My wife and I, we're going to run it. So everything that I learned in the Marine Corps, I went ahead and started applying it towards the business. Here I am, because people say, well, how can you utilize what you learned? This is like a transition. So I'm done with my military service here. Now I'm a civilian. What am I going to do? Well, some people say, well, how has the Marine Corps assisted you in running a business? Okay. Number one, discipline. Discipline is number one. I'll give you a brief example, Joshua. If you find $1 million, so you're going to have the discipline to actually say, you know what, I'm going to put it away and I'm going to use it for other things. Nah, you're going to want to spend some of that. That's where the discipline comes in. I have money. Am I going to put it on my properties or am I going to buy the Porsche Taycan? Properties. Prioritize things. Who do you think talks to City Hall? Who do you think talks to the city inspectors, police departments, attorneys, plural, bankers, plural? I do. But I'm very confident having a conversation with them. You know, they might be, you have masters or whatever. It doesn't matter. Marine Corps gave me that confidence to walk into any office and say, I'm here. Let's get something done. Mm. I also have contractors. I also have employees. Confidence to say, hey, you know what? I don't like this. Can you please fix it? Oh, sure. No problem. Some softies are like, oh, that's okay. We'll leave it like that. You know, you're paying these people. So you have that confidence to say, I'm going to raise the bullshit flag here. I don't like that. Time management, definitely time management is very important while you're doing that. And you need to be aware of your finances. You could have someone do it or you could do it yourself. But I tell you, if you do 4 years in the Marine Corps, at least you're going to come out and you're going to be successful. Just learn what you learned. Another thing, Joshua, that I forgot to mention, when I went to boot camp, a lot of people, oh, boot camp this, and they tear you down, they bring you up and all. And that's true. But something they never mention is, did the kid know how to take a shower properly? Did the kid know how to shave properly? Did the kid know how to dress properly? For me, I didn't. Mm. I didn't like sharing shit. And then some white guy's like, hey, can I get a pair of socks? And I'm like, the fuck is this white guy asking me for socks? I know. And then I'm like, oh shit, yeah, take them. And that was the beginning. I'm like, you know what? You have to share. You have to be one. And that's when they get you there. But I learned a lot. More than just discipline. I learned how to properly take a shower. I learned how to properly eat, how to tie a knot, with the measurements, tie clasp, where does it go? Trousers, where do they stop? You know, all that stuff. We take it for granted, but it's there. It's there. You can clearly see it. You sit down on a table. If you're a military member, more than likely you're going to use a napkin. And a lot of people don't because they're not used to it, but that's how they teach us. They teach us to eat like this. Proper posture. So we do. And that's what I think separates service members from non-service members.
Yeah. Jose, how many years did you do again?
20.
20 years?
Yes.
And 20 years, four tours. Well, just four tours in the Army.
Yeah.
And then a couple in the Marines, Nicole, right? Yeah. I know you said you're going to the VA. And did you say you got diagnosed with PTSD?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So
mild, 70%.
What kind of mental health things were you struggling with upon transitioning out?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing. I'm good, man. I don't need to do anything. You're not going to tell me I got PTSD. I feel normal. Mm-hmm. You want to take meds? Well, Butrin and all that. I'll take it, but I don't need it. That's how I thought.
Oh,
I know that's a lot of veterans feel that way. That's why I'm addressing it. Mm. So I said, well, good. I'll start taking your meds. Wife, take your meds. Take your meds. So I started taking my meds. Didn't notice a difference. I'm like, I told you, shit doesn't make a difference. So I stopped. I stopped for like 2 months. And I started doing some crazy ass shit that I never done before. And I said, you know what? I do need those medications. I swallowed my pride and I started taking them nonstop. And now I take them nonstop.
What kind of things were you doing?
Go to ATM, take out some money, leave. Sir, your ATM card, you want it back? Forgetful, things like that. Hmm. That a person in my position can't do that. For example, when I was drinking, I'd get on Amazon, buy the stuff, put it on the cart. And in the morning, open my email, hey, your packages are coming in today. I said, what packages? The ones that you ordered yesterday. Oh, my God.
You're forgetting a lot.
No, I wasn't forgetting. I was drinking too much. Hmm. So then I talked to my dad. My natural dad, and he told me, you know, get this medication, it works. So I looked for the medication, I couldn't find it. I had to go to the jungles of Ecuador to find it. And it's a medication that you take, and if you drink, you feel sick. It stops you from drinking. So I said to myself, okay, we're going to set a date. When that date gets here, no more drinking. And that's it, cold turkey. And I did cold turkey. I started taking them. And I stopped taking them, and now I don't drink, and I don't take them.
You went to Ecuador to get medication?
No. I tried to find it in California, in the United States. Nope. They stock it, but they don't have it in hand. Mexico, they'll find it there. Stock it, don't have it in hand. My wife's Colombian. Colombia, again, can't get it. So my father-in-law got it through Ecuador.
Mm.
And the reason why they don't have that medication here is because they don't want you to stop drinking. Mm. You know, those beer manufacturers and wine people want you to keep drinking it. We veterans suffer from that so much. Wow. And they make it so easy for you in the military to drink. Man, you could drink every day if you wanted to, bro. So I stopped drinking at 51. I have like a year that I haven't been drinking.
Nice.
I feel great. You know, your health, you know, you feel a little better. So then what I've noticed, though, Sean, is that a lot of veterans don't get seen. They're like, man, I'm macho. I don't want to be seen. I'm good. Then you ask them, they come up with these excuses like, when was the last time you went to the VA? Oh, yeah, when I went to the VA, it was horrible. Back in 82, they treated me like 82? You know, things have changed, right? So they have this misconception that it's, no, the VA is bad. They treated me bad. You know, you and I were talking. They treat us well. Long Beach, I haven't had a problem. They treat me very nice. I go in 3 months speak to my psychiatrist. I take my medication. If I don't want to drive, pop the computer on. Hey, what's up, doc? Hey, how you been doing? Last time we spoke about blah, blah, blah. Yeah. No, VA does that for me. But you have to look for it. Now, this is the thing that bothers me. Is that we have veterans that are now using the benefits. Two things. One, if you're a veteran and you have kids and they're going to college or they're going to go to college, California college fee waiver, 10% disability, your kid goes to any university college in the state of California, if you enlisted in California. So now you got these veterans, right? And then they have their kids. They don't know that they can have their kids going to college for free. You have four kids, no problem. They all go to college for free. What do you got to do? You got to go be seen or speak to someone at the VA. That's all. Pick up the phone. Hi, I'd like to see if I can sit down and talk to someone about some issues that I'm having. Oh, sir, no problem. They'll go pick you up, bring you to the VA. You have those volunteers. They'll take you to wherever you have to go. When you're done, bring you back, put you in the shuttle, send you back home.
Mm.
Hey, I don't want to do that, but gas is expensive. They give you gas money. You get $11. I mean, what else are you asking for? Just go in there and talk to someone. If you get evaluated, I'll make it real quick. If you get evaluated at 100%, let's say 100% is $4,000 a month. You put in your application in January, but you get your results July. That means there's 6 months that they're working on your paperwork. All that, back pay. So you're going to be getting like a $25,000-$30,000 check in one lump sum. That's for educational sideways. Now you got guys that say, hey, Jose, I'm like you, man. I don't have any kids. Just me and the vieja. Okay, cool. What are you going to do? Have you considered going and getting that hearing checked? Oh, no. Why not? Oh, no. They have all these excuses. You know, I heard you talking about MEPS. MEPS is essential. What they're doing in MEPS is they're making sure they're disqualifying you. That's their job. So if your recruiter says, hey, don't be saying this, don't, because their job is to get rid of you. They're giving you a whole list of all your medical stuff. Now, you notice on the ear hearing, you're good. But now, you're bad. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? They're going to go, oh, I see. Oh, your knees were good, and now we have a problem with your left knee. Let's check it out. And then they check it out. Now, if you already have your kids and you have your wife, go get your disability. You get approved, $4,000 a month. You pass away, they give it to her until she passes away. Don't leave her hanging without nothing.
Well, Jose, we're going to wrap it up.
Okay.
Before we cut the tape, any last words?
Invest in silver.
Silver?
Yeah, I got you a gift.
Yeah?
Yeah. Silver round.
Nice.
Okay? You get those for about $25, $26, okay, on eBay.
Thank you.
They're set to explode to $350, $550, $1,000 an ounce.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Wow.
I've heard that. You're not the only person I've heard that from about investing in silver.
The stockpiles are gone. Pretty much all silver is being shifted to India, believe it or not.
Wow.
They want to be the number one silver in the world. They can set their own price because they have the most. Yeah. So if they can set their own price, they could say that's worth $1,000.
Wow.
It's worth $1,000. All they're doing is making their currency and their government really strong by saying it's worth that much, and gold too. But anyway, people are not familiar with it. You'll see when it explodes, everybody's going to be running around trying to get silver, and there's not going to be any. I see it already on eBay. It just goes away. It goes away.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you, sir. Thank you for being here and contributing your story to Urban Valor. Much appreciated.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Joshua.
Bad thoughts that make my mind scared. Hold me hostage and they don't fight fair. Who gon' pray for me and wipe on my tears? Who gon' save me if you not right here? Move this darkness and make my sight clear. Take me away cause I don't like here. Ghost of my past, they fill in the night air. Wake me up, I'm trapped in my nightmares.